The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet up to $500. Terms and conditions apply, but get the details at WynnBET.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by BetQL. Your bracket may bust, but your bankroll never has to with BetQL. Use promo code MARCH30 for 30% off the entire year of BetQL. That's BetQL promo code MARCH30. We're also brought to you by OddsCrowd. OddsCrowd has tons of free fantasy betting contests, including a $2,000 season-long MLB contest and a $500 weekly contest. Download their app today, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. That's sportsgambling.com/odds. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is your home for free daily video picks from the SGPN crew. It's like YouTube for sports gambling, and make sure to subscribe to our profile at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. We're also brought to you by PicksWise. Follow the PicksWise Capper Contest at PicksWise.com for free picks and analysis throughout the tournament from the likes of John Rothstein, Rashad Phillips, Jeff Nadeau, and more. See which expert is trending hot as they ballot it out for a winner-takes-all $10,000 prize over at PicksWise.com. And finally, we're brought to you by Better Edge. Better Edge operates like a stock exchange for the sports world. Pick the teams that you like and have somebody else by the other side of that bet. Sign up at BetterEdge.com promo code SGP for a free $10 play. That's BETTOREdge.com promo code SGP.
We're back, baby, in your dirty, filthy ear holes. The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. I would be your host, Jeff Fox, the writer-editor at sportsgamblingpodcast.com and the purveyor, I think that's the right word, of MMA Dash Manifesto, the head guy over there, something like that. So make sure you check out all my stuff there. Make sure you go enter our UFC 260, pick'em contest at MMA-manifesto.com. This would be episode 23 of our awesome podcast here, your most favorite podcast, and actually humanity's most favorite podcast. It's if you're one of the 3.5 billion people who listen every episode, thank you for tuning in. It's incredible that we have so many listeners. So like I said, this is episode 23, so I will dedicate it to the greatest basketball player to ever wear number 23, who would be, I'm going to ask my co-host who I haven't introduced yet, who would that be?
If it's not Michael Jordan, I'm going to be pretty bummed that you're a basketball fan and said somebody other than Michael Jordan.
It's not Michael Jordan.
Ooh. But I also feel like tongue-in-cheek-wise here, you're not saying LeBron James. You're going to say...
It's not LeBron James.
Who's a Canadian who's wore 23?
It's not.
Did Detlef Schrempf wear 23?
No, and he's German. He's definitely not Canadian. He's German. But nonetheless, number 23 would be the greatest player ever, would be Cedric Ceballos of the Phoenix Suns of the 1990s. So this is my favorite player of all time. So that's what this episode 23 is dedicated to. It's going out to you, Ced. The slam dunk contest winner, an all-star with the Los Angeles Lakers, and my favorite player while he was on the Suns. And the voice you just heard would be my co-host who is on a heater, so you're going to want to tag along with him this week. Or I might just be saying all this to jinx him because he's making me look bad the past few weeks. He went 9-1 with his picks last week, and I think we figured out he is 16-4 over the last two and 25-10 over the last three. And we won't go farther back than that because he was still pretty crappy back then. Anyhow, that would be the host of the Top Turtle MMA podcast, which I just listened to today, as well as the Prelim Picker podcast, which I also listened to today. So this is, except I listen to those at 1.5 times speed. So when I do the podcast here with Dan, it sounds like he's having a stroke because he's speaking at a normal speed. But regardless, he's also the co-host here, so it's three podcasts for Dan. And he also writes for sportsgamblingpodcast.com. We're keeping him busy over there. He's doing lots of baseball and college basketball stuff there, and he writes for the MMA-manifesto also. And like I said, his name's Dan. You can call him Gumby. Last name would be Vreeland. Hello.
Hey, yeah, thanks for listening to the Prelim podcast, but I will note that I'm pretty sure none of those bouts are still intact since we posted that episode.
Yes, it's been it's been like the past few hours have been Dan emailing me saying this fight's off, that fight's off, this fight's gone, that fight's gone, and whatnot. UFC 260 is, to quote what I said, a pretty crappy card. It started off so great, but then it turned out pretty crappy. Some breaking news we had today. Surprising, former UFC women's bantamweight champ Miesha Tate is making her return to the octagon. Did you hear that, Dan?
I did hear that, and I'm going to tell you, while it is shocking news and sort of surprising, I think, to a lot of people, I did have an inkling that this was coming. I actually, when I interviewed Juliana Pena a little while ago, right before she fought, who did Juliana Pena just beat? Whoever she just beat. She was training with Miesha Tate and had said something about, like, being nice to have a mentor back in the gym. And I was like, oh, is she back in the gym? And she's like, yeah, she's just kind of feeling things out. And I was like, oop, yep, we're going to hear about that in a little while. I kind of had an inkling that she might be coming back. It also seemed like she might be coming back when, all that stuff with 1FC fell through. Like, she was no longer working with 1FC, and 1FC seemed to kind of not fall out of her favor, because she was there and she seemed to like her management job there. So for her to leave there and then find out she's training with Juliana Pena, I kind of thought it was coming. The fight itself is a weird fight.
Yeah, she's just to go back, Juliana Pena beat Sarah McMahon, and that's a fight we got wrong. So that's why we don't remember who she beat, but that's who she beat. Yeah, first of all, I didn't know she left 1FC. So yeah, I hadn't heard that. I'm not really surprising, since it seems like they're all smoke and mirrors with the Mahdi thing. She probably wasn't getting paid. I have no inside information there, but I wouldn't be surprising if there are some issues with the money there. She's only 34 years old. She's a mommy now. Hasn't been in the cage for 5 years? Yeah, November 12th, 2016 was her last win. Her last fight. She lost to Raquel Pennington. She lost UFC 200 before that to Amanda Nunes. That's where she lost her title. And then she won the title on March 5th, 2016 against Holly Holm, a fight that she was getting dominated in, and she pulled out a submission victory in the last, minute and a half of the fight or so. It's been a while. She hasn't won in over, 5 years. She hasn't been in the cage in almost 5 years as well. It's surprising that she... she just gave birth last June, it says here, so she has two kids. Because Wikipedia doesn't lie, so that's definitely right. So anyhow, not knowing that she was gone from 1FC, this makes it a little less surprising. I figured that UFC still had her rights to her fight contract rights, so I'm not surprised that she will be, if she's going to fight, it's going to be in UFC. And she is fighting Marion Renault, someone who we predicted would have been cut after getting destroyed last weekend, but I guess they're trying to give Cupcake Tate a cupcake fight, but I don't know if it's going to be after 5 years away or not.
No, and I know that Renault has since come out and say that this is her retirement fight too. She's all done after this, which makes sense. Yeah. She's lost a bunch in a row. She's 43, so it wouldn't totally surprise me if she had just asked the UFC for one more chance to just kind of go out, and she's been a serviceable fighter for them. She's been a top 10 talent, so them giving her one more fight, I guess, isn't the most surprising thing. I am a little surprised, but good on her for good on them for giving her one more, good on her for getting one more. And it's weird fight making, but hey, I not the fight I expected to see this afternoon when I saw all these cancellations, but I'm here for it.
Yep, for sure. All right, before we get to 260, lines haven't been posted yet, so we'll get Dan to post the line. I always like to put him on the spot and make him post the line. So what is the line for Tate versus Renault, which is what happened in the summer, I take it, right?
July, I heard.
Okay.
It's booked quite a ways out. I imagine when that line does come in, we're going to see Miesha Tate as a sizable favorite, -350, -400. Renault coming off the losses, despite the fact Tate's coming off a long layoff. Like, they're giving her an opponent who's been losing. And you remember, the casuals money is going to come in on Miesha Tate, right? Like, the Casual's money does not come on somebody coming off of a four-fight losing streak who, you know, has one-eighth of the name value as Tate does. So, yeah, I just wouldn't expect ever to see Marion Renault anywhere near a favorite in that fight.
Do you think that's right, though? Would you be picking Tate to win this?
I think I would. It's kind of like when we broke down, you know, the Jessica Penne fight. Did we do that? Oh no, I just did that in the prelim primer.
Yeah, you wasted your time doing that.
Hey, that fight's not happening either. Yeah, when I broke down Jessica Penne versus Hannah Goldie, I said, you know, like, you can't break down a 5-year layoff, right? Like you have no idea what that does. So if you're picking against Jessica Penne in that fight when it does get rebooked and when we do eventually see it, you're literally just picking against hoping she deteriorated enough. Because, like, in her prime, the last time we saw Jessica Penne, she'd mopped the floor with Hannah Goldie. And I do mean that. I do actually believe that she would wipe the floor with Hannah Goldie. So your only analysis to picking Hannah Goldie is just like, oh, well, she's probably worse now. And is she? Yeah, but that's, like, not a good reason to pick against her, in my opinion. And I kind of feel that way about Tate. Like, do we really believe that Tate hasn't been doing jiu-jitsu? Do we really believe that Tate doesn't occasionally, like, wrestle? Like, she... the father of her two children is a fighter too. Like, I can't imagine neither of them trained anything anymore. You know, I can't imagine she was over in ONE FC just like at a cushy desk job, not training. So, you know, you imagine she's training with like obviously less intensity and all that good stuff. But I just think that like she was world class. And you're going to tell me she's, you know, the time off makes her worse than Marion Renault on a 4-fight losing streak. I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not. But that we'll save that. We'll put that to bed for another day or another month, a few months away. Hopefully that fight doesn't fall through. Which brings us to UFC 260, which the whole fight card is has fallen through. So I figure we should talk really, really fast and get this posted because it's going to change, probably changing as we speak. But before we crack into it, let's tell you about WinBet. They're back sponsoring the podcast again. College Hoops is back, and so is WinBet. They're live, bringing you the action of real sports betting and online casino play, all produced by Wynn Las Vegas. Get in on all your favorite teams, Cinderella stories, and tournament upsets. Don't miss out on the madness. Join us, promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WinBet. Get started today, and you'll receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. And I see they have my Phoenix Suns as a sizable favorite for against Orlando tonight. We're recording this Wednesday night, so not a surprise there. So yeah, make sure you check out WinBet. Okay. And if you need help with your NCAA picks, I'm sure Dan's been writing lots of articles about it. Have you not?
Yeah, and I actually was on a pretty good heater there too, because the article I wrote about the Western Regional, I said that, you know, watch out for Ohio, and they obviously had a good first round there. And I said, watch out for USC, who's a 6 seed and still alive in the Sweet 16.
There you go. Dan is on a heater in life, ladies and gentlemen. Like, things couldn't get much better for Dan Vreeland. So, all right. That's not the same story as we have for UFC 260. It's just, this fight card's been taking on water for a while now, and it hasn't sunk yet, but it's definitely listing in the waves. We're down to what, 9, maybe 10 fights, depending on who you trust and who you talk to. Like we mentioned in the last podcast, they lost the co-main event featherweight championship, Alexander Volkanovski and Brian Ortega. Volkanovski, pretty much as soon as he touches down and dirty grubby United States, gets COVID from clean Australia, where no one gets COVID. So that fight's gone, at least for now. Johnny Walker, Jimmy Crute was supposed to be on this card, and Walker got hurt last month, so that one's off. We're supposed to have a heavyweight, big boy, chunky guy battle. We were being deprived of that also. Blagoy Ivanov and Marcin Tybura. Ivanov got hurt, and that one got pulled also. What else do we have pulled? Randa Marcos, a Canadian that I could have picked against. She was supposed to fight here against Luana Pinheiro, and that's been bumped off because Marcos got COVID. Shane Young, Omar Morales. We're going to break it down, but we're still, you know, depending on who you speak to, this fight is either happening or not happening. I guess they're the two options, I guess. It's either happening or not happening. it was happening, and then Young got pulled because he's part of Volkanovski's camp, so probably there's at least some contact issues there. But now a lot of respected parties are saying that it's, including Young's camp, are saying the fight's still happening. So we'll break it down as of Wednesday night. You know, it's still up in the air. We'll break it down as if it is happening, because we're just good guys. Or we'd have no fights to talk about, basically, if we didn't. Then the aforementioned Jessica Penne, Hannah Goldie fight's been pulled because Goldie's got COVID. Alonzo Minifield, William Knight. Knight got pulled. No, sorry. Yeah, to my, oh, no. Previously, Minifield got COVID and they got postponed. And now they're supposed to fight this week. And then Knight got removed for COVID issues. So they have some new guy named Fabio Charrant will be fighting Alonzo Minifield. So basically, it's COVID ravaged card, which makes me think this is the perfect time for the UFC to
have an open arena,
have an open arena event, lift up to continue with my boat analogy, lift up the anchor and set sail to across the country to Florida and try to have 15,000 people in an arena, and then maybe like sail over to Texas and pack that stadium too, because Texas and Florida don't have any issues with COVID. So yeah, this is the perfect time for them to. Obviously the pandemic's over, so this is obviously a smart business move by them.
Yeah, I just can't. I mean, like, I'm hoping those things go off without a hitch, but it does seem when you're canceling, you know, four fights during fight week, and that's just because of your fighters who you've attempted to isolate.
Right.
Got it. Never mind the people who you've got no control over. Yeah, it just seems not like the right timing.
No, of course not. But we'll try to be positive here, and we'll just we'll stick to the gambling from here on out. No, we won't. I'm sure I'll have more comments. But regardless, let's get started. And I think we can get started with the Canadian. We'll see if I am going to go against him or not. Marc-André Barriot, Quebec's finest. He will be opening up at this point. He is the opening prelim belt, the only early prelim belt. Currently scheduled for ESPN Plus and UFC Fight Pass. Middleweight belt against Abu Azatar, who is making a return after quite a while off. He is the brother of Otman Azatar, who had that fun adventure at Fight Island where he had someone sneak in like Mission Impossible style to bring him quote-unquote potatoes, is what the official story is. So anyhow, I'm full of aside, so you must be used to that by now, though, people. Okay, this I'm just checking. I was vamping there because the start time has been pushed way back. It's supposed to be 6, but since we have no fights on the card now, it will be 7:30 as of now. That fight will be starting on, like I said, ESPN Plus and UFC Fight Pass. Middleweights, Marc-André Barriot, Abu Azatar. Azatar is 14-2-1 with 7 knockouts, 1 submission. He's 1-0 in the UFC, but that was way back in July of 2018. He got suspended for illegal potato use, correct?
Yes, I believe that was it.
Yeah, he pissed hot for some sort of supplement that was inside in a potato, which was against the drug rules. Was it what, 2 years suspension, or was there other things going on there?
I think he got the big one, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, he's been on the shelf for 2 years for like the TJ Dillashaw treatment, if you will.
Right. Okay. So hopefully his brother learned from him and won't be sneaking potatoes in, because we don't want him getting suspended too. So regardless, so he's won an all UFC, but that was like almost 3 years ago, almost exactly 3 years ago. We're only a few months out from July. Before that, he was 2-0 in the World Series of Fighting, so he has a bit of a top level experience. He has 2 inches of reach on Barriot, grappling stats, but we're talking small sample size because he's only fought once in the UFC, but the grappling stats are in his favor. He is at small dog status, +103. As for the Canadian, who apparently his nickname is Power Bar, I don't know the story behind that, but that's the name. 11-4 with 1 no contest, 8 knockouts, so he is a finisher of the knockout variety. As for himself, he's never been finished in a fight. He's lost 4 decisions. 3 of those decisions have been in the UFC. He is 0-3 in the UFC with 1 no contest. He won via KO his last fight, but that got overturned. What did he do? What was he?
He's a USADA guy as well, but his was a tainted supplement. So they did get it moved down to, I believe, 8 months or 9 months. And that brings him to pretty much being free to fight this weekend.
Okay, right. So it was another potato issue with him. So he's 0-3 with one no contest officially. He's really, if you're just counting performance in the cage, he's 1-3. He did win via KO his last fight. He is 3 inches taller than his opponent. He's 4 years younger. Striking stats are in his favor. -110. And drum roll, I am taking the Canadian for a change.
Ah, oh, interesting. You're going with the Canadian. So, you know, I was going to go with the Canadian. And if you listen to the prelim primer, this is going to be my first flip-flop of the day.
All right.
There might be more than one because, you know, I just told you earlier on, you know, my kind of breakdown of that Jessica Penne versus Hannah Goldie fight was we can't, and with the Misha Tate versus Renault fight, we can't just like assume they're worse due to time off. And after going back and watching Abu Ziatar in his last fight, which, you know, granted it is 3 years ago and, you know, it's been a long time and hey, maybe he's off the juice now and might be a different fighter. He did look a lot better than Barrio in Barrio's last win. Even like, sure. Are either of these two like top level middleweights? Heck no. Ziatar like really wings hooks and kind of is reckless. But I actually think that that plays pretty well against Barrio in the long run. Originally, I liked Barrio because he looked like he was moving forward a lot in that last fight. He really had a sense of urgency. I think he knew his job was on the line. Then he gets, you know, the no contest and still keeps his job somehow. So I think he still is in that position where he knows his job is on the line and is going to pressure. But like, it's maybe not the best idea to pressure against a guy who just throws haymakers when you move forward and get in his face. So, you know, like the like careful approach that Barrio had that actually lost him his first few fights probably would do him better against Ziatar here. And I just think he's probably going to still be pushing forward. So I actually like Ziatar here. And I think there's a decent chance, too, that if this does go to the ground, which it's possible that Abu wants it to go there. If it does, I think he's probably got an advantage there, too. So, like, I'm going to go with the Ziatar, and I'm going to say I think he probably gets Barrio out of there, too.
Really? Even off the potatoes?
Even off the pig, you know, like
they're both raw potatoes, so.
Yeah, and yeah, they're both eating raw potatoes. So, like, I think, again, it's just so hard to tell, right? We've seen guys come back from those long suspensions and be like, oh, okay, well, they're the same guy. They're just like, you know, so one guy's maybe a little slower and you're like, oh, that's bad. One guy's less punching power. Oh, yeah, that's bad. But like largely the stylistic thing is still there. And that's why I like Ziatar, right? Like he wings hooks at a guy who not blindly comes forward. He covers up pretty well when you throw the hooks back at him. But a guy who kind of just moves forward because he was told he needs to have a sense of urgency in this fight, because if he loses, he's losing his job. And I think, you know, like that in the back of his mind being like, I have to move forward, which is pretty much what we saw out of him his last time before he hit that uppercut. It's all well and good, but when the guy who you're fighting likes to fight against a guy who does precisely that, you know, like that stylistic thing doesn't change, regardless of whether or not he's a little bit slower, his timing's a little off from having not fought, whatever. You know, like he just needs to find that timing, and who knows how long that'll take, but, you know, stylistically, I don't like Barrio in this one.
All right, well, whether Barrio's mangé la pomme de terre or not, I'm still taking him. So, and that's some French for you, ladies and gentlemen. So that's basically it. That's the fight card. We broke down the. Oh, wait a minute. There's a couple more. That's really your prelims. Before we move into the official prelims, let's tell you about BetQL, another one of our awesome sponsors. Looking to get an edge and make smarter bets during March Madness? Well, you should read Dan's articles, first of all, but also BetQL's algorithms scan thousands of data points across every game to find the best bets. Easily find the most profitable bets based on their top betting trends. Your brackets may bust, but your bankroll doesn't have to. Head to BetQL.com to get started today. You can head to the App Store or Google Play to download BetQL. Bet smarter, not harder, and use the code MARCH30 for 30% off BetQL for a year. That's BetQL.com, promo code MARCH30. Every time I'm on there, they've got some super successful ratings for picks. You got like 60, 70, 80% for basketball stuff. So make sure you check out BetQL. All right, prelim card. I'm starting at 8 o'clock because it's on ESPN. So whether there's any fights to show or not, the show will go on at 8 o'clock. ESPN, ESPN Plus. We will start with, okay, this is the fight which may happen, may not happen. It's Shane Yagan, Omar Morales, a featherweight belt. We'll pretend it's happening. at this point. We'll start off with Young, who is the gentleman who is part of whose camp is he? Oh, part City of Volkanovski's. Yeah, Volkanovski's camp, which has the issues because they left Clean Australia. So Young, 13-5, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's 2-2 in the UFC. He got KO'd his last fight. He's 8 years younger than Morales, and he's at plus 155 currently. Morales, 10-1 with 2 knockouts, 5 submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. He is 2-1 in the UFC. He did lose his last fight, which was his only pro loss. Before that, he won his way into the big show on Dana White's Contender Series. He also was 1-0 in Bellator. 3 inches of height on Young, 1 inch of reach, grappling stats in his favor. He's at minus 180. So for this hypothetical fight, we'll call it, what are you thinking?
I think I'm going to go with Morales. The thing about this one for me is there's a big unknown with Morales in two respects. Number one, he's only fought once at featherweight in the UFC, and it was against Giga Chikadze, which, like, first of all, that's a huge ask in your first featherweight fight, right? Giga is an absolute beast. And so, like, how good does he look at 145? It's hard to say. Nobody looks good striking against Giga Chikadze, and that's pretty much all Omar Morales does, right? Like, he shot one takedown in his UFC career, and he got it. So, you know, Morales in that way, I don't know anything about. And then in addition to that, I really don't know anything about Omar Morales' takedown defense. Like, I can't glean anything from his UFC fights about whether or not the man can actually stop a takedown. Because if you look at his fights in the UFC, you know, he fought Harvey Park on the Contender Series. That fight didn't last all that long. He knocked him out cold. He fought Dong Hyung Ma, who likes to just absolutely go out there and swing him. You know, you saw him do that with Polo Reyes. And then he fought Mowgli Benitez, and Gabriel Mowgli Benitez shot one takedown, which he's a good grappler, but, like, we only saw him shoot one takedown, and Morales stuffed it. And, of course, Giga Chikadze didn't shoot on him, right? So we're seeing a guy who's pretty much not faced any takedowns, and not for anything, Shane Young is a decent wrestler. Like, he doesn't have the greatest, you know, takedown percentage if you look at it. Some of that's because he fought Alex Volkanovski in his UFC debut before, like, joining up with the guy. But, like, you know, like, he has a decent takedown game if you watch his regionals before that. So it'll be interesting to see if he can use that game plan. But, like, with that being an unknown, I'm not picking Shane Young just on that, like, unknown, thinking that his wrestling is probably good enough. You know, like, Morales is very physically strong. He's dynamic. He keeps distance well when he is striking. So all of those types of things seem to hint that, like, you know, it's going to be hard for Young to get that takedown, but it's a big unknown for me. So I'm going to say Omar Morales wins this fight. I'm going to say, though, pretty much anywhere the odds were on this fight, I was going to feel uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, I'm picking Morales too also. But yeah, it's probably a good matchup for Young coming off a knockout, that he's not fighting a knockout artist. So that's another aspect, but I think we'll stick with Chalk and go with Morales, and maybe the fight won't even happen, and we won't even have to worry about it. So hopefully the next fight happens, because it should be a fun one. Light heavyweights, Modestus Bukauskas versus Mikhail Oleszczyk. That's right. Oleszczyk.
That's my Polish ancestry coming through right there.
There you go. There you go. Let's start with Modestus. 11-3, 8 knockouts, 2 submissions. 1-1 in the UFC, but he did get knocked out his last fight. So we got another guy coming off a knockout loss here. What else we got? He is 3 inches taller, 4 inches of reach. He's at plus 140. Mr. Polish man, 14-4. Michael O, 14-4 with 1 no contest. He's got 10 knockouts, 1 submission, so he's throws to the leather. 2-2 with 1 no contest in the UFC, so 2 wins, 2 losses, 1 no contest. He's lost his last 2 fights, both via submission. That's something of note, but he's fighting a guy who's not big on submissions, so that should be good for him. Last fight was over a year ago, February 2020. He's a year younger, striking and grappling stats in his favor. He's at minus 150. And despite all that, I think I'm going to ride with the dog in this one. And you were going to too, aren't you?
Yeah, I told you I was going to go flippy floppy on a couple of them, because I just, as soon as I picked him on the prelim primer, I like was like, man, but wait a second. And I went back and watched some more Bukauskas, because you know, I think mentally for Bukauskas, I saw this guy who's like, you know, I think of the Jimmy Crute fight. You know, this is why I picked it against him, is I was like, well, in that Jimmy Crute fight, he looked like he didn't belong in there. But, like, who looks like they belong in there with Jimmy Crute? Like, Jimmy Crute's exactly. A fucking animal. Like, the guy's a beast. So, like, you know, the only guys who have dealt with Jimmy Crute well are super grapplers like Misha Serkinov, right? Like, he's the only guy who's beat him ever. And when you look at what Jimmy Crute did to Michael Holashejuk, I mean, he battered the hell out of him, too. So then I was like, man, why did I just, like, think of Modestus Bukauskas as that? So I went back and watched him, and I will say some of the fights that really impressed me. His Cage Warriors title fight against Martin Nielsen, who's fighting in PFL now. He's a guy who's a pretty impressive light heavyweight, and it's just shocking to me how powerful Bukauskas is at every moment of the fight. Like, he doesn't get tired. And I think for me, that's what I like about him in this fight, is that Holashejuk comes out with a lot of energy. And actually, my co-host on the prelim primer said that. He's like, the thing that worries me about Holashejuk is he comes out with a lot of power and he'll probably just knock him out. But then I got to thinking, if he doesn't, man, Bukauskas is in way better shape. And Bukauskas has power late, whereas I don't feel the same way about Holashejuk. And, you know, Bukauskas did get finished by Jimmy Crute, but like I said, you know, that's a tough sell right there. So I actually think that this fight probably goes late with Bukauskas being cautious early, making sure he fends off any takedown attempts he has to, or make sure he stays out of trouble with some big exchanges. And I actually think he probably gets the finish late instead.
So we are both going with the Lithuanian Baltic Gladiator. It actually is a nickname. We're both taking him.
He once told me in an interview that he wanted his original nickname to be something that involved Baltic. And originally he wanted the Baltic James Bond.
He does kind of look in his picture. He does. He's got the hair all styled. Yeah, he could be James Bond.
I would also suggest actually he's a Bond. I would also suggest the Baltic Rory McDonald. That certainly would work.
Yeah, he does look like him too. And he looks like he's fighting a Bond villain this weekend too. If you look at the pictures, yeah, they're very. It's that might work. So anyhow, we're both rolling the dice on a dog, and hopefully, I think you know he came in with a lot of steam behind him, and I think that's a good plus 140. Yeah, I think we're gonna. I think that's not a safe bet, but it's a smart one. That's for sure. Let me tell you about a couple of our sponsors. Speaking of smart stuff, let's tell you about. I told you about BetQL already. Let's tell you about Odds Crowd. Hopefully, enter the Odds Crowd contest for March Madness for your chance to win $8,000. Odds Crowd has plenty of free contests, including a $500 weekly contest and a $2,000 season-long MLB contest. So Odds Crowd isn't just a fantasy betting contest. It's a social app built just for sports bettors. Free to download. You can live group chat with other bettors, track your bets, set up private betting contests with your buddies, and much more. Download the app for free or go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. We're also brought to you by PicksWise.com. Helmed by a team of trend-watching, data-devouring, sports fanatic wise guys giving you the who, how, and why behind every prediction on every game, every day, and every sport, all for free. PicksWise presents the Capper contest to follow with the likes of John Rothstein, Rashad Phillips, Jeff Nadu, and six other experts all competing for a $10,000 winner take us all prize. Follow the action for their free picks and analysis every day of the big dance by visiting PicksWise.com/March-Madness. PicksWise.com/March-Madness. Okay, back to the madness of UFC 260. I'm going to update the Wikipedia page because you never know, Dan. You know, something may have happened in the 20 minutes. No, it looks like we're still – next match is still going to be a welterweight battle between Jared Gooden and Abubakar Nurmagomedov. You may recognize Nurmagomedov's last name. He is an official cousin, right? He's not just one of these pretend cousins that Habib has. I think he's blood, right?
I don't have any clue.
I think this might be the one that actually is. There's like a bunch of Nurmagomedovs around, and they're all like supposedly his cousin, but I think this one might actually be his cousin. But it does, regardless. That's who's fighting. So he's fighting Jared Gooden. Like I said, there's too many Jared Gooden Gordons. Jared, there's too many similar guys with names like that in the UFC. So they got to do something about that or go by nicknames. So we'll talk about the welterweight Gooden. He's 17-5 with 7 knockouts, 6 submissions. We got a finisher here. 0-1 in the UFC. He is an inch taller, 5 inches of reach, and 4 years younger, all over Abubakar, and he is at plus 203. As for Habib's cousin, 15-3-1, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions. He lost his UFC debut. He actually got tapped out, which is not what you would expect from a Dagestani Nurmagomedov, but that's what happened. That was back in November of 2019. He is 1-2-1 in his last 4 fights. That included before UFC, he was in the World Series of Fighting / PFL, where he went 6-1-1. So he's on a bit of a skid here. Grappling stats in his favor, we're talking one fight only, small sample size. He's at minus 225. I guess I'm leaning towards him, but I'm not big on him or the number that high.
Yeah, I would say I'm also not very big on him in general. Like, if you look back at his PFL / World Series of Fighting run, there's a lot of fights that give me a little bit of a pause. But the reason I like him here against Gooden is his wrestling and top grappling tends to be better than what we saw against Zalata. I think he went in there and had a little bit of octagon jitters and getting caught in that triangle. And I don't think that that's a typical thing, because he's out wrestled and out grappled some pretty damn good grapplers. Like, if you look back at his record when he was in World Series of Fighting, you know, he beat Matt Secor, who's a Ultimate Fighter guy and is, you know, basically exclusively a grappler. Like, he doesn't do anything else. He beat John Doomsday Howard kind of that way by, you know, kind of controlling him and out grappling him. You know, he beat Danny Davis, which, you know, maybe not a lot of people know Danny Davis, but he's kind of, you know, same sort of build there. And I think too, if you just can count all of that stuff in, the fact that he has out grappled those guys, I don't see Jared Gooden as a guy who is going to, you know, like, force him to stand and bang with him. I think there are a lot of people in this division who will handle Nurmagomedov here and who will make these lines look silly. You know, because the line on a Nurmagomedov is always skewed because his last name is Nurmagomedov, whether he's his actual cousin, his brother, or some guy he once knew who also has the same name. It doesn't really matter. But, like, at this time, like, I actually just don't think Gooden is the right guy to exploit that line.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with all that. So we're going with chalk in this one. Brings us to currently the main event of the prelims, light heavyweight fight. The original matchup we broke down a little while ago, and we differed in the picking for that, but I don't think we're going to differ in our pick here. Maybe, though, because we're talking about a Massachusetts guy. So Fabio Charrant is filling in for William Knight against Alonzo Minifield. Charrant, hopefully Dan has some info on him. I'm sure he does. He's a grappler from Massachusetts, so I'm sure Dan has info. He is 7-1 with 5 submissions. This will be his debut, and this will be short notice. It was announced Wednesday, so we're talking half a week notice. He's won 3 straight fights, though. He was on the Contender Series once and lost the fight there. He is an inch taller, 7 years younger, so that's especially the age thing is a big factor there. And he did just fight last month, so a little over a month, February 21st, I believe I saw was his last fight. He's actually pretty respectable, plus 241 here. I thought the line would be higher. He's fighting Minifield, who's 9-2, with 8 knockouts, 1 submission, so everything is a finish for him. 2-2 in the UFC, but he won his first two. He's lost his last 2 fights, including getting KO'd his last fight. He won 2 fights in Contender Series. He's 2-0 there. He's 3-0 in LFA before that, 1-0 in Bellator. So we're talking a lot of high-level experience. Pretty much all his fights are in a big promotion or a very large regional promotion. He's currently at minus 250. He is my pick, and I'm surprised the line is this low. Maybe Dan has some insight in Charrant as to why the line is actually respecting him a little bit.
So I would say this is, I think if you give Fabio Charrant a full training camp, I think that's right. I think the line is perfect.
Okay.
I would line this fight right around, you know, Menefield negative 250 or a little bit more than that. But that's if Charrant was in a full training camp preparing for Alonzo Menefield. You know, because he is good. Like, if you look at his record, he's 7-1. And the only losses to UFC Alexa Kamer, and it was on the Contender Series. And he actually didn't look bad in that fight until he ate a flying knee. So, like, he is good. The one thing I will say here is he doesn't have an advantage on the feet. That's part of why I'm leaning Menefield. That's part of why I'm picking Menefield here. In addition to the fact that he didn't have a camp where he was focused on Menefield. But the other reason I'm picking Menefield here, too, is just kind of what I've seen out of Chiarot. You mentioned he's a grappler, right? Like, if you look at his record, you know, there's two guillotines, two rear naked chokes, and an anaconda choke, and the guy's only got 7 wins. But if you look at the last two fights, he's had a big step up in competition, and he hasn't been able to finish those guys. You know, he fought Myron Dennis on the LFA main event. I believe that one was for the title as well. Was that a five-rounder? That was a five-rounder. And, you know, he had 5 rounds to go finish Myron Dennis. And like, Myron Dennis is good. He's 18-7. He's a beast. You know, he would have been a worthy LFA champ, too, and probably would have gotten this fight if it wasn't for Chiarot beating him. So, but that's the thing, is that Chiarot took 25 minutes and couldn't get him out of there. I don't think he's going to get 25 minutes to beat Alonzo Menifield. He has to go out there and finish Alonzo Menifield, because I think Alonzo Menifield's a better striker. He's more tactical. He's got the almighty tiebreaker in Saif Saad in his corner. So, you know, he's going to have the best third round in history. And not for anything, too. You know, I mentioned the Myron Dennis fight, too, but he fought UG before that, who's a guy who's been fighting up in this Northeast area, too. Saw him a couple of times in Premier FC, which is an organization out of Western Massachusetts. And again, UG is like a 39-year-old, you know, guy who's 3-0 and still couldn't get him out of there because he's tough and he's strong and all that kind of stuff. So I like Chiarot a lot. I'm glad he's in the UFC. I think he's deserving to be in the UFC. Heck, I might pick him in a rematch against Alexa Kamer. I'm just not going to pick him against Alonzo Menifield on short notice.
Right, no doubt. Is he even in Vegas, you know? Does he train out of Vegas now, or is he having to fly across country to get to this fight?
So I have no idea, but I do know that he is part of Lozon MMA, and he has the manager, Tyson Chartier, I believe, who's the guy who does like Rob Font and all of that. So there's a chance they were out there for somebody already. I don't know who that would be. I have to look ahead at like next, there isn't a card next week, but maybe 2 weeks card. Maybe there's somebody at the Performance Institute or something. You know, I have no idea what he was doing out there, but I imagine he must have been close in order for it to happen. Either that or Chartier must have been like, yeah, we'll have him on a plane tomorrow.
Yeah, no doubt. You got a chance. You got to jump at a chance when you get it, for sure, even if it's a very tough matchup for him. So we are both going with the favorite here in Alonzo Menifield. So that wraps up the prelims. Let me tell you about our last two sponsors, then we will go commercial free for the main card. So just tell you about BetterLand.Vegas. BetterLand.Vegas, it's like YouTube, but for what hashtag did Gens only care about, which is sports betting. They're giving out, or actually we, as in the Sports Gambling Podcast, are giving out free daily video picks over on our Better Than Vegas profile page. You can check out Saturday morning. Normally I post, or Saturday early afternoon, I post the UFC ones. Better Than Vegas is always running a ton of free contests as well. They got a ton of free picks and handicappers to check out. Make sure you subscribe to our profile so you don't miss a pick. SportsGamblingPodcast.com/BTV. SportsGamblingPodcast.com/BTV. And while you're there, go ahead and give Top Turtle a follow too, and you can see Dan's pretty face. And then let's tell you about Better Edge. That's BTTOR Edge. Better Edge allows you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house. Legal in more than 40 states. Post the plays you like and have someone at the Better Edge marketplace take the other side. They have a ton of other fun against the spread picking contests as well. Sign up today at betteredge.com and use promo code SGP for a free $10 play. That's BETTOR edge.com, promo code SGP, of course.
Let me jump in real quick here right after the advertisement, because I made a big snafu. Fabio Chiarot belongs to Iridium Sports Agency. That's Jason House, not Tyson Chartier. They're like Northeastern rivals, to my understanding. Didn't want to step on those toes. His former opponent, William Knight, is the top game management guy. So my bad, Jason K. House put that dude on a plane, most likely.
There you go. Dan does not want to start a Massachusetts war. They will track him down. All right. Let's get to our main card, unless you have more things you have to apologize for.
No, I didn't mess anything else up. I got all these picks right, and I know everything.
Okay. Perfect. I know everything. That's very true. Put that on a shirt. Let's start with lightweight, shall we? Jamie Malarkey and Kama Worthy. Kama Worthy is on Top Turtle this week, and let me tell you, he spits some fire, that man. He's angry about people who use potatoes to get an advantage in fights. He's not happy about it. So make sure you listen to that. So we'll talk with Malarkey. How about Malarkey first? Our whole podcast is basically Malarkey, but regardless. He's 12-4. That's my first dad joke, I think, of the day, possibly.
That's a good one, too. Yeah, you gotta make fun with malarkey.
Low-hanging fruit. It's an easy one. So we're talking malarkey's 12-4, 8 knockouts, 3 submissions. So he is a finisher, except he's not a finisher in the UFC, where he is 0-2. He is an inch taller than Worthy, 8 years younger. He's got the grappling advantage, stat-wise at least. He's at plus 120. As for Worthy, 16-7 with 9 knockouts and 3 submissions. 2-1 in the UFC. He did get TKO'd his last fight after winning his first 2 in the big show. He's got striking advantage. He's at minus 120. And I'll be picking him, and Dan will too, because he was on his podcast this week.
Yeah, not just because he's on my podcast.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I honestly have very, very high thoughts about his fighting style, too. Like,
yep.
The guy is an absolute beast. And, like, the Devontae Smith fight will forever stick out to me. I mean, it's one of the greatest upsets of all time, and I know nobody will remember it because of, you know, like, the fact that, like, you know, are you going to remember a debuting fight for Kama Worthy against Devontae Smith? Probably not. You know, you ask somebody the biggest underdog, and you're like, oh, you know, Ronda Rousey got head kicked by Holly Holm. He was plus 640 in that fight and took it on, like, 2 days' notice against a guy he had previously trained with. Like, that's an insane story. And he went in there, and not only did he look good, he looked amazing. Like, he tagged Smith a couple of times. He looked like he was getting the better of the exchanges. Then he landed that big knockout blow. And between that and the guillotine choke he got on Violent Bob Ross, Luis Pena, like, he's just a finisher. He's a guy who goes in there and is looking to be mean. And I'm really impressed with him. You know, like, he didn't have the greatest career early in his career. He did fight Paul Felder in his third fight back in 2012, which I think is pretty funny. But, like, he's got a lot of, like, hard guys on his resume early. So when you see that 16-7, you're like, eh, I don't know. But, like, since he's really figured out his training and has really put it all together, he's been a force. And I think here, Jamie Malarkey, I like Jamie Malarkey. He's been on my show, too. And he's a super nice guy. I just don't know what his path to victory is here. It's like, I think if he shoots a takedown, I think Kama either stops it or subs him on the way in. If he tries to stand and bang with him, I think he's going to get lit up like a Christmas tree. So, like, I just don't see any real path here for Jamie Malarkey. So I'm going Kama Worthy, and I'm going Kama Worthy fairly emphatically here, especially at 130.
Oh, he could be tipping his hand. I think you get first crack at the locks.
No, you get the first one, because last week I went first and I took freaking JP Bays.
That's so right. Well, thank you. Thank you for tipping your hand here. Couple things on Worthy. A Kama Worthy is a fantastic name, first of all. So that's enough.
His brother's name is Shaka.
Oh man, Shaka, that's amazing. That's great. And his nickname's the Death Star. So there's two more reasons for you to pick Kama Worthy, and was very entertaining on Dan's podcast, and he definitely is not a potato user, or he perhaps doth protest too much, but I don't think he's a potato user from the fire he spits. So make sure you listen to that. Okay, women's flyweights. This is the fight I'm looking forward to. Another Canadian I can decide whether or not I'm going to go against. We've broke down this fight, I believe. Yeah,
7 or 8 times.
Yeah, I believe it made air at least once. Jillian Robertson versus Miranda Maverick. Women's flyweight just got bumped up to the main card. By Saturday, it could be the main event, for all we know. So we'll break down Robertson, who, before I pick against her, like, she's, I know she was born and stuff in Canada, but I think pretty much she's a Floridian. And she has been a Floridian for a long time. So I'm just going to, you know, just say that. She started American Top Team when she was 16. So it doesn't seem like she was in Canada for too long. We'll just get that out of the way. So no one thinks I'm a traitor. Tipping my hand here. So she is a grappling wizard of sorts. She's got 9 wins, 1 of them via knockout, 6 via submission. She is 6-3 in the UFC. She did lose her last fight after winning 2 before that, 2 straight before that. She's 2 inches taller. Grappling stats are in her favor. She's plus 145. Miranda Fear, the Maverick, 8 wins, 1 knockout, 5 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. She's 1 in, actually, what are their records? I don't have the records here. One sec. Jillian Robertson is 9-5. And Miranda Fear the Maverick is 8-2. Okay, now we got that out of the way. So, like I said, 8-2, 1 knockout, 5 submissions, never been finished, so it was 2 decision losses. 1-0 in the UFC, she's won 4 straight fights. She's has 2 inches of reach, 2 years younger, striking stats in his favor, -155. Robertson is a love watching her fight. She's a fantastic grappler. Dean Thomas Black Belt, I believe. Maverick is scary in all the right ways in the cage. So I am going with her.
Yeah, and you know, we don't have to belabor this too much. You can look at any of our last 13 episodes. We've broken down fights because I'm pretty sure they were scheduled for all of those. And you know, my analysis is pretty similar. Look, this fight goes to the ground if Miranda Maverick decides it does. It doesn't go to the ground at Jillian Robertson's request unless she jumps guard in a clinch. There's no other way she's getting Maverick to the ground herself. And when you count that in with the fact that Maverick is brutal on top, she's heavy. She does a great job of keeping her hips low. She keeps her arms out of trouble. She's got good ground and pound. Like, I just can't imagine Jillian Robertson subbing her off of her back, and I definitely can't imagine her sweeping her. So, like, the question just then becomes, like, what's the path to victory here for Robertson? And I think really the only logical one I'd like for her is the sub off the back. Like, I think that's her best chance. And if the best chance is a sub off of her back and she has no way of getting it there, like, man, how are you going to pick her? So, yeah, I think this is Maverick's fight fairly safely. I will say, you know, she's young. So, like, she is, you know, not that, you know, you just say everybody who's young is prone to errors. But, you know, we're talking about Miranda Maverick here, who's only 23 years old, you know. And that's pretty early and pretty young in your career to be fighting somebody who, I mean, Jillian Robertson is young too, but she's fought 7 billion times already. So, you know, there's a chance that there's like that prospect-y loss in there for Maverick still. But hey, I'm not counting on her having jitters after she just dismantled Leanna Jojua's face last time out. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident in Maverick on this one.
There you go. Bantamweights, Sean Clownman O'Malley versus Thomas Almeida. Almeida will be making his return. When was the last time he fought? Actually, he fought fairly recently, didn't he?
He did fight fairly recently, but yeah, he was very forgettable.
Right. Yeah, he hadn't fought for a long time before that. He at one point was a up and coming prospect, but that was a long time ago. He lost to Jonathan Martinez last October and hadn't fought for over 2 years before that. So we'll break him down first. He's 22, and this will be bantamweight if I hadn't said it already. He is 22-4, 17 knockouts, 4 submissions, 5-4 in the UFC. All 4 of those career losses have come in the last 5 fights. He's only 1-4, including losing his last 3. He did fight at featherweight last fight. Normally he is a bantamweight, though. He's at +270. Sean O'Malley, I call him a clown because, well, he acts like one, and he's, last time we saw him, his hair was what? Half of it was bright blue and half of it was yellow, I think, and curly. So
it was definitely weird.
It was definitely clownish. So he is, or he likes to smoke weed too, guys. He's super cool. If you haven't heard already, he is 12-1, 8 knockouts, 1 submission. He's won 4 of his last 5 fights. He got knocked out his last fight, but if you ask him, he didn't get knocked out. He is undefeated still somehow. Usually you hear that when people lose a decision, not when they get knocked out, but that's the clown for you. He's 1-0 on the contender series, 4 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, 3 years younger, striking and grappling stats in his favor, -305. I'll be going with the clowns.
Yeah, I'm going to go with him as well. But here's the thing I will say. I do think Thomas Almeida is being a little bit underrated here. I think, for one, you know, we did say, you know, he hasn't looked good. He's had a lot of time off. He's lost 100 in a row or whatever. But, like, let's remember what we liked about Thomas Almeida. We thought Thomas Almeida was the same thing that maybe Sean O'Malley did become. Right, like the fun sniper striker of the bantamweight division. I mean, he came out and he just flying kneed Brad Pickett into a different dimension, and everybody was like, "Oh my God, this is the next thing." And he had an undefeated versus undefeated guy matchup between him and Cody Garbrandt to be like, who is the next guy? And it was Garbrandt, right? It wasn't him. And then those other losses are to Jimmy Rivera and Rob Font. Like, so he did lose 3 out of 4 and then disappeared for a while. And like, yeah, like maybe we can be like, oh yeah, maybe he's lost 4 out of 5. But man, those losses are not bad losses, right? Like losing by decision to Jimmy Rivera is not a bad loss, and especially when you took a round off of him. So I actually think that we're probably underestimating Thomas Almeida a little bit. And granted, yeah, he didn't look good against Jonathan Martinez, fighting an opponent change at the last second and, you know, having been out of the game for 2 years and up a weight class. Okay, he didn't look good there either. I am just saying he has that, like, sniper knockout potential. O'Malley's not the easiest dude to hit, but hey, if somebody's going to go out there and beat O'Malley, it might be somebody like Almeida. So I'm going to go with O'Malley officially, but I am going to say there is a path to victory here for Thomas Almeida that is not necessarily as small as some people are making it out to sound.
All right, but that's, yeah, well, we both agree, but we're going to steer clear of, well, actually, we have to bet on every fight. I forgot. but if you're not going to bet on every fight, probably steer clear of this one because -305 is probably a little high for a guy who thinks he didn't lose when he got knocked out. So moving to this bout, has been bumped up to the next few fights are tough ones for me to break down, surprisingly. This one, surprisingly, because it seems pretty cut and dry, but it would be a welterweight fight between former king of the division Tyrone Woodley and Vicente Luque. Woodley is 19-6-1 with 7 knockouts, 5 submissions. He's 9-5-1 in the UFC. Before that, he was 8-1 in Strikeforce, but he has lost 3 straight. His last win was September of 2018, so we're almost coming up in 3 years. He's at +221 for this one. Luque, 19-7-1 with 11 knockouts, 6 submissions. He's 12-3 in the UFC, 1-1 on Tough. He was one of the guys who came through the Ultimate Fighter. He's won his last 2 fights both via knockout, a form of knockout or TKO. He's won 8 of his last 9. 2 inches taller, inch of reach, 9 years younger. For some reason, I was thinking Woodley, but I just because, you know, that's a good number and stuff, but he's looked so horrible. I don't know if I can pull a trigger on that.
And he's looked so horrible. Let's face this for a second. He's looked so horrible for the last 75 minutes.
Yes.
You know, like that's a really long time to look bad. Like, it's not like, you know, he did lose 3 out of 5 of those rounds, or he got knocked out early in this fight. No, like, he's looked for 75 minutes like he wants to go back to rapping, and that's not a good look. And here's the other thing I will say. The thing about Vicente Luque, if you go back and look at all of his losses, which there aren't many to look at in the recent history, you know, like, he lost to Leon Edwards, and he lost to, you know, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and of course he lost, you know, way back on the Ultimate Fighter to Mike Graves, which was a really weird loss for him to have. But those other 2 losses really come to guys who are able to hit him when he can't hit them. You know, like, Wonder Boy is able to poke you, get the hell out of there. You know, Leon Edwards can do a similar thing. He can hit you with a couple of jabs and a cross and then get the hell out of Dodge, and he's not there for you to hit him again. Anybody who stands in front of Vicente Luque winds up in a bad place. Randy Brown's the type of guy who will stand in front of you and box. Nico Price ain't afraid of shit, and his eye got blown up to the size of a beach ball. All of those things, for me, are really clear indicators that it ain't a good path here. There isn't a good path here for our guy Woodley. Like, no matter what the number is, there's just not a good number for him. So I'm going to go with Vicente Luque. Because I think he's not the type of guy who's going to hit him like that.
No. Woodley's going
to... He's going to throw the big one. He's going to throw the big one repeatedly.
He's going to get himself backed up to the cage, first of all, which is what he always does. And he's going to try to... he's going to spring from his ankles and hope to knock the guy out, which hasn't worked out for quite a while for him. So, yeah, I've talked myself into Luke. I don't know. When I was breaking stuff down, I was thinking maybe Woodley, but no, I can't pull the trigger on that. The main event is very difficult. I've flip-flopped a bunch of times in this one, so maybe we can. I guess I'll have to make a pick about it in the next minute or two, but we will. We'll talk it out, and we'll see what we come to here. It would be for the UFC Heavyweight Championship, which is currently held by Stipe Miocic. He will be rematching against Francis Ngannou. Miocic won the decision back in 2018 when the two first fought each other. All right, Miocic 20-3 with 15 knockouts. 14-3 in the UFC. He's won his last 2 fights, 8 of his last 9, and he's got striking stats in his favor. He is a underdog at +107, which is rare to have a fighter be an underdog, especially a fighter who's already beaten his opponent to be an underdog. As for Ngannou, 15-3, 11 knockouts, 4 submissions. So he's never Never gone to gone to a decision victory. Of his three losses, all via decision. He's never been finished. He's 10-2 in the UFC. He's won his last four fights all via KO. He's 3 inches, has 3 inches of reach. They're both the same height. 3 inches of reach. He's 4 years younger. He probably is going to be around 30 pounds, 25, 30 pounds heavier than Miocic on weigh-ins. Who knows when we actually get to fight night. I'm guessing he probably cuts. Ngannou's massive, so I'm guessing he probably cuts weight because he usually measures, weighs him real close to the limit at 265. Miocic, last fight, he was about 233, I believe. So he'll be bigger regardless. He is at minus 117. All right, help me make sense of this, Dan. What the quick basic breakdown on this is Miocic is probably the better fighter. He's definitely the better grappler, better wrestler, which he's proved. He's got the experience. He's beaten the guy. He's got a pretty decent chin, but it's not a perfect chin. He has been knocked out. And like your co-host, Shockwave Dave said, he never was much of a speaker, but it seems to be even more labored than before. Whether that has to do with taking shots to the head in the heavyweight division or not, who's to say?
Did you happen to see, out of curiosity, that video clip that got posted around with the YouTube subtitles of a Stipe interview?
Yes, and the subtitles just came up.
It said music plays, yes, or something like that.
The closed caption person just gave up on I'm putting it through. So yeah, that's a little alarming when you see, especially heavyweight, acting that way. As for Ngannou, who knows if he's a good wrestler, because he never has to use it, and when he does have to use it, he wasn't good. Miocic was able to absorb his blows and take him down at will. So you gotta assume that's still the case. But there's no way that Miocic is gonna want to last 25 minutes in the cage with the guy who hits that hard, because I don't think his chin may have been able to handle it 3 years ago, but I don't know if it can now. He's been knocked out since then by Daniel Cormier. So I think I'm talking myself in Ngannou, because the longer the fight goes, it's, you know, more chances for him to land that blow. And I don't see Miocic finishing him. So I think the fight's, if Miocic is going to win, he's going to have to grind it out, and that's just going to put him more at risk.
Yeah, it's such a weird fight to break down, because, and I've said this 100 times too, like, so we had the question after Ngannou lost to Stipe the first time, is like, okay, clearly his holes in his game are his takedown defense and his cardio. So what we'll do is we'll put him up against people who will test that. You know, like, who's better to test your cardio and your takedown defense than fighting Cain Velasquez? Boom, right. That fight takes 30 seconds and we learn nothing about him. Oh, okay, well, we'll give him modern Cain Velasquez, Curtis Blades, same thing. Lots of takedowns, burns you out. You know, this will be a great chance to learn about him. Boom, what was that, 22 seconds or something like that. Like, he's fought the right people to answer the questions and then just not had to answer the questions. So, yeah, all of those questions still exist. Did he get better at any of those things? You know, is he all of a sudden got a better gas tank and can knock you out in the fourth round instead of looking labored and exhausted? Can he stuff enough takedowns to keep on his feet and force Stipe to box with him? I don't know the answers to that, but here's why I'm picking Francis Ngannou anyway. I don't know that it matters.
Right. You know,
and that's the problem with the Cain Velasquez and the Curtis Blades fight. I still think Cain Velasquez, maybe not, you know, the Cain Velasquez he fought, but I still think like a prime Cain Velasquez or a prime Curtis Blades, who actually gets to fight a whole fight against Francis, I don't think they have much problems with him, but I don't think it mattered, because all he's got to do is land that big blow. And you know, you have to imagine him working with Dewey Cooper, who's a hell of a kickboxing coach, and whoever else he's been working with, because he brings in all kinds of coaches and stuff. You have to imagine he's got that perfect uppercut ready to go for the first time that Stipe shoots. And like, I have to think that he's going to land it. He has 4 times in a row since then. So, yeah. Man, I just – it's such a hard fight to break down, because you got a guy who had holes and didn't answer them. You have a guy who beat him and has seemingly just proved he's the same guy who beat him since then. And still, it doesn't matter to me. I'm still just going to take the big, heavy, athletic guy.
Yeah, it comes right – yeah, you know, it's like I said before, it's a cheat code. He's bigger, stronger, and more explosive. explosive. So as in heavyweight, that's pretty much all you need to win a fight. So we both predicting Ngannou versus knockout, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's not going to win another way. Like, he's going to knock him out or he's going to lose.
See it happening early, late, or when you see it happening?
I think it's going to happen early, because I do think that the longer this fight goes, the more it favors Stipe. Yeah. You know, like, you know, I said, there's questions about his gas tank. There's questions about whether or not he has power in the fourth round. Yeah. And we don't know that. So I wouldn't ever confidently say Ngannou late. I'm going to go Ngannou early. And, hey, that's pretty much just like – I mean, it's pretty much what I've predicted for his last four fights. So we're going to go with that again.
All right. So there you go. So it's Ngannou early via knockout if you want some props. Any other props that you're liking on this one? We haven't really hit on any when we were breaking stuff down, I don't think.
Man, you know, there isn't very many that I do like on this one. I mean, like, there are a couple of fights that you can imagine are probably going the distance. I don't think Abubakar Nurmagomedov is going to finish Jared Gooden. I think you could probably take that one goes to decision. I think you could probably also take I think you could probably also take Miranda Maverick by decision if you like that one. But I do think that this is a card that has a lot of fights that with potential to go the distance, even if they have guys who finish in them. You know, like, I could see, you know, even Kama Worthy versus Jamie Malarkey, I could see going the distance. So, like, I don't love a lot of props on this one. So, yeah, I would probably stay away from those. And, you know, the Francis Ngannou one, I think, makes the most sense. If you like him, no sense in paying negative money for him. You might as well get him by knockout or getting him in one of the first two rounds.
Yep. Makes sense. All right. Lock time, and we'll wrap this baby up. Miranda Maverick is going to be my lock at minus 155 against Jillie Robertson. I think she wins this fight. No problem.
Man, I really thought you were going to steal mine and go with Kama Worthy. And so I guess I'm going to take
Kama Worthy. I thought I was too. I changed my mind, though.
Yeah, and I will tell you, I was already planning a backup for when you stole it, and I was going to take Miranda Maverick. That's my other close lock. I think if you're not going to take Kama Worthy as your lock, I think Miranda Maverick is the right one. And the reason I like Kama Worthy better is I think they both probably have exactly the same chance of winning their respective fights. And Kama Worthy's giving me a little bit better odds. So I like him a little bit better as a lock. But, hey, there's probably no bad thing that could happen to you if you throw both of them in a parlay either.
There you go. Hashtag throw them in a parlay. And just to remind everyone, locks this year, Dan's 1-2. And he's down $139.
I was 9-1 last week.
No, whatever. I'm 3-0, up $172. So just, you know, I thought I'd put that out there. All right, let's put this bad boy to bed. I'll hope everyone, hopefully UFC 260 actually takes place and these fights we broke down actually happen, and we'll get this posted into your ears as ASAP. In the meantime, make sure you check out our site, sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Read all the awesome stuff we're writing there. Listen to Dan's podcast, Top Turtle MMA and Prelim Picker, and go to MMA-manifesto.com. Read all our great stuff there. And make sure you enter our pick'em contest. Scroll down the front page a bit and you will see a UFC 260 pick'em contest, giving away a $70 gift card to a MMA/sports apparel company that sponsors Izzy Adesanya and basically all the Australian New Zealand fighters. So check that out. And also follow us on Twitter, Jeff Fox Writer and Gumby Vreeland. I think that pretty much does it. Until next time, let it ride.